Muddy Knees Media.
Totally Football Show Summer Special today. Side with Vinagre leaves with bitter taste in the mouth as Ocampos finds the silver bullet to finish Wolves' endless season. Meanwhile, as Donetsk goes through to the semis too, we hear from Sasha on Shakhtar, a Russian occupied with Ukrainians. It's kind of the opposite of what normally happens, etc. All that, plus we'll be having a big look forward to Wednesday night's Champions League quarter-final, Atalanta-PSG at the Estadio de Luz. But who will? It's all in this Totally Football Show Summer Special in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. It's Wednesday morning, 12th of August for you, you clever thing. We're still on Tuesday night. Aren't we, James Horncastle?
We are indeed, James.
Nice to have you on board, though. And same to you, Mr. Julien Laurens, all the way from Paris.
Bonsoir. Paris, indeed.
All right. You sound like you're in Paris. That's great. You sound like one of those, you know, 1970s, you know, Fairs Cup kind of commentators.
Yeah. That's good. Bring a bit of nostalgia to the show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great. Jules, by the way, you're not wearing a shirt. Listener, can you picture it?
It's really hot in Paris.
It's not going to be hotter than it is in London. It's so hot. Anyway, we're not here to discuss the weather, unless it's the severe weather warning that's coming out of Duisburg after their performance against Wolves this evening. They're through to the semi-finals of the Europa League against Man United. Meanwhile, Shakhtar are through as well from Tuesday's games, and they'll be taking on Inter. We're going to begin, though, with Sevilla's 1-0 win over Wolves. A cagey affair. Didn't turn out to be quite the firecracker we were expecting. Huh, Mr. Horncastle?
No, James. Although I wasn't really clear about what I should be expecting from this. And to be honest, having sat through the conditions myself, the prospect of playing football in them didn't enthuse me all that much. But I felt Sevilla dominated this game, albeit without creating too many clear-cut chances. I mean, you look at the numbers that they put up. What was it? 75% possession, 14 corners to nothing, 18 shots as well. I think the last shot that Wolves had on target was Raul Jimenez's penalty kick. And yes, it ultimately was decided in what the final 5 minutes or so. But I think, to be honest, Sevilla deserving winners. And it just felt that Wolves, after beginning their season in 83 BC and playing 700 games to get this far, were a little bit too tired.
As you say, the heat a factor, perhaps. If the players had been allowed to take their shirts off like Jules and play in skins, you know, rather than drinks breaks, perhaps UEFA should make that a condition for hot weather. I think that's everyone would enjoy
emoji.
That. So, yeah, from Wolves' point of view, a disappointing evening in so many ways. Only the one real Traoré run. I think a lot of us felt that he might be a decisive factor in this game. But it might have been enough, that run, because it did earn them the penalty, which Jimenez to society then failed to convert. There was a lot of controversy on British TV about the dastardly Sevilla keeper getting an inch off his line and people encroaching and stuff. But as you say, James, no shots on target after that. And Sevilla very much the team in control. Were they winners, would you say, Jules?
Yeah, I think so. I think the game plan probably for Wolves was always going to be that, try to play quite deep and then hit them on the counter-attack. As soon as I saw Nuno putting the 3-5-2 formation instead of the 3-4-3 that is a bit more attacking with when Diego Jota plays or, you know, Potencia or whoever is the other forward. But the 3-5-2 is very defensive and very... with a lot of players in midfield when then Donker comes in. And it could have worked out, I guess, if Jimenez had scored a penalty and if they kept defending well. But I think Sevilla were good. I mean, Ever Banega, I know he's 32 years of age and he's going to go and play in Saudi Arabia or wherever he's going to cash in. But what a player. I mean, at that level, in a game like this, and to have so much control and dictate so much the tempo of the game and the pace of it is just wonderful. And Lucas Ocampos, who we've mentioned before on the show, but who was a good player in France for Marseille, but nothing, nowhere near the kind of season that and the kind of numbers that he's putting in with Sevilla this year. And again, he, you know, he he got the winner and he was so decisive for them, even if he didn't have a great game overall. But he's there in a key moment, and I think that's very valuable for a team like Sevilla.
Well done to Wolves as well. A phenomenal journey, TM, that they've been on, not just over these 13 months, but since the club changed its whole structure and Nuno came in and all that. I think a lot of questions now about what tonight's result might mean for the future at Wolves. No European football, of course, next season. Might that mean changes for the manager and for one or two key players as well, like Jimenez?
Interesting, James. I think Wolves will be hoping that that isn't the case for the obvious reasons, but also I think with seasons due back, certainly pre-seasons due back in only a couple of weeks, I think it's not an ideal situation, A, for you to lose a manager, but B, for a new manager like Nuno, say, if he wants to go elsewhere, try his hand at a quote-unquote bigger club, then he's not going to have a lot of time to, A, talk to the board and say, I need these players, go get me them. Also, I mean, he is in a pretty ideal situation because of the synergy that there is between his agent and Fosun at Wolves. He's not going to find that elsewhere unless he goes to another club in that kind of mould. So, curious. I think Jimenez as well. I mean, you look at the kind of the fee that's been sort of touted for him as what, between 40, 50 million. Again, I think you've got to look at it in the context of a depressed market where clubs that would ordinarily not think twice about paying that for someone of his quality, with the uncertainty that there is around, where crowds will be coming back and teams will be getting match day revenue, and also, there's still the prospect of a disruption from a second wave.
We'll have to see.
Obviously, there's a lot of time between now and
there
October,
is.
James.
And one of the things will be happening in that time is the semi-final with Man United. Ooh, two seasons ago, these two teams met in the group stage. Was it the group stage or was it actually the quarterfinal? No, it was the quarterfinals, I think.
Last 16.
Yeah, football heritage. Right.
So last 16, then the 2017-18 Champions League. It was 0-0 in Seville. And then the Spaniards, they got a 2-1 win at Old Trafford. That was in the dark days of Jose Mourinho, of course. Who's your favourite for this semi, Jules, and why?
I mean, clearly this is easily a Champions League quarterfinal kind of game, to be fair. And I think Sevilla played a way that United love their opponent to play, so I will go for a United win.
All right. What do you mean by that, Jules?
I think that United will be very happy to let Eder Banega and Joan Jordan and all the other very technical Sevilla players have a lot of the ball and then hit them on the counter. And, I think the Sevilla back four is great. And I think Jules Koundé tonight, the Frenchman, had an incredible game. So did Diego Carlos.
Paris born and bred.
No, it's a shame. I only say if he is. So if it's a French player who is not from here, I don't even mention where he's from.
Okay, sit back and soak it up and hit them on the break. It worked well enough for... hang on. What do you think, James?
Against United? Well, look, I think the football heritage that Jose Mourinho brought up, explanation and mitigation for that knockout a couple of years ago, it still holds because, I mean, that was in a competition that Sevilla don't have football heritage in. Whereas this one, they sure do. And it doesn't matter how much they change. I think nine of the players who started tonight weren't in the team last year, weren't at the club. It's Monchi all over again. And, you look at the run that they're on. What is it, 19 games unbeaten? That's a club record. So it's a team that isn't used to losing. It's gone into this tournament in great condition, great confidence, and I think as Jules was saying, you look at the performances of the likes of Banega tonight, who again, sort of just been back in Spain, back with Sevilla after that spell with Inter, just looks a different player. Looks like he's in his own environment, and it's the right place for him. So it's going to be a tricky game for United, even though I think on paper United have more talent.
Well, that clash coming up on Sunday. Meanwhile, also from Tuesday's action, dust off your Basel faulty headlines because Shakhtar went roaring past the Swiss side 4-1 to book their place in the semi-finals. After this, we'll hear from Oko Sports' Sasha Gurionov.
Everyone remembers that time you've had that peach of an accumulator looking good only for, oh, and the keeper's let it slip through his legs in the 94th minute. Or the right back has to pull on the gloves and face a penalty. Or Man United have again conceded a late equaliser. But with Paddy Power's Acca Cracker, you get a free bet if one leg of your fourfold plus Acca lets you down on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Minimum odds of 1 to 5 on each leg. Online exclusive excludes shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
This is the Totally Summer Special by The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. If you're not yet a subscriber to The Athletic, take out a 30-day trial to see their unrivaled coverage of each and every Premier League club by heading to theathletic.com/totally.
Hey, listener, join me in welcoming Oco Sports' Sasha Gurionov to today's Totally Football Show Summer Special. Hey, Sasha.
Hello, James. Great evening.
Well, yeah, a great evening for people who enjoy Shakhtar Donetsk, because you so very clearly do. There they were, dark horsing away as usual, battering Basel 4-1. Were they even better than you were expecting them to be in this game?
Yeah, I think so. I think they were better than anyone in Ukraine was expecting them to be. I think it's the way that Basel were just offered absolutely nothing in the first half, and the way that the Brazilian front five played for Shakhtar today. They were absolutely irresistible. I mean, I think if you look at the way the game started as well, they win the ball in the first minute. They don't lose it until getting a corner, and then Junior Moraes arrives to nod it in. Keeper is nowhere. I think it's actually very odd from Basel's point of view. They're actually selling their first choice goalkeeper to Montpellier, Jonas Omlin, for about €5 million. So they have this backup called Georgi Nikolic, who was just absolutely all at sea today. And I think once Shakhtar go 1-0 up early doors, it's their game. And there are spells where their attacks are just irresistible. Marlos, he's like naturalized Ukrainian, but he is always picking the right pass, the silver fox. And it's just, they were just the first 45 minutes. I think it's probably the most impressive half of football I've seen actually from anybody. Because they attacked with such verve, they picked the moments to counter. They made hardly any mistakes. They hardly misplaced the pass. They could have been 4-5-0 up. They were amazing.
Sasha, you were just making bold comments before we kind of came on air about how it's lucky PSG aren't in the Europa League, because they get mashed up a treat by the boys from Ukraine.
Well, that's, I think that's lucky for everyone else. But I think if you also look at that group stage, They're very generally very gritty. I mean, that 3-0 defeat at home against Atalanta is sort of a bit of an unusual result, because they kept on coming back against Dinamo Zagreb. They're always there in the game. They're very good combination of maturity, and I think they have a few players over 30s, including Junior Moraes, the main goal getter. But there are several young players, and I think probably the best of them is Marcos Antony in midfield, who's only 20. He just signed a new 5-year contract. He's like the next, I think, generations of Brazilians coming through him and Dodo at right back. And just think, everything they did was so mature, so grown up. I think Basel could have sat in the 4-5-1, yet they managed to get behind the three-man midfield, which is, I think, something that Inter should watch out for, because they dragged them out and then just hit them into the space. Marcos Antonio moved forward really, really well, set up what should have been a goal for Junior Moraes. They pressed when need be. And also, they were very smart in the way they saw out the second half. They didn't really do anything for half an hour. Then Basel made a treble substitution. Within 15 seconds, they conceded the penalty, because Shakhtar were just on top of them. And then after that, I mean, they were just sort of seeing the game out, and they could have won by more. And I think, you know, if you look at the way Interplay, and certainly the way Dodo attacks up the wing, I think there could be gaps that he could potentially get behind Ashley Young.
Interesting. To be fair, this is a kind of different level of opponent next up for Shakhtar. They're not faced very good sides yet in this competition. Benfica, who are having a kind of meltdown season, and Wolfsburg, who've been all over the shop, and then this Basel side. Do you think maybe you're slightly overestimating their potential?
I think given the state of this season, their ability to run until very late into the games is really very impressive. Yes, maybe they haven't come under that much pressure, but the way they've taken advantage of any space that is available, for example, against Wolfsburg, where, again, I know they scored 3 goals in like the last 3 minutes, but they could have scored about 6 before that. I mean, Wolfsburg keeper had an absolute stormer. I think they're very smart, very gnarly, very streetwise. And I think, again, you must not forget, this is a club that's been homeless since 2014. They kept the structures. They're a very professionally run side. They still, I mean, for example, they kept the youth system miraculously, which currently exists in Kiev. again, they've just moved from Kharkov to Kiev, where they will coexist with Dynamo Kiev. But the fact that they've remained a viable proposition when quite a number of other clubs in Ukraine went up the wall from the region in the east, because, I mean, there was no way they could survive, is really, really impressive. So if they do manage to actually win this tournament, I think, you know, it's going to be quite a triumph, because I don't think any other club in European football has really faced such adversity over a sustained period.
No, I think that you're absolutely right when you say that. What do you think then, in football terms, about their prospects against Inter, James?
I think Inter were very impressive last night. I think, having seen Shakhtar in the group stages, I must admit that's a long time ago now, and Sasha will know more than me, but certainly on Italian TV tonight, there was a feeling that the way Shakhtar play would play into Inter's hands, in that, this is a team that likes to have the ball, likes to play in their opponent's half, and Conte likes nothing more than playing through opponents, not hitting them on the counter. Don't say counter-attacking to him, because he thinks it's a dirty word, but sort of inviting teams onto them and then playing through them, which, yeah, does carry a little bit of risk, but they feel that there'll be the space in behind to release a Lautaro, to release a Lukaku. And Lukaku, in the form he's in at the minute, I think there are very few defences, very few centre-backs in the world that would relish playing him in these conditions.
I would tend to agree with this, because I think if there is a weakness in this team anyway, it's probably at centre-back. I mean, they had a 21-year-old playing today, because the other first-choice centre-back, Hochelav, got sent off against Wolfsburg. But also, I really don't rate the goalkeeper, Andrei Pyatov. He's 36. He's been there since forever. I think there is a reason why he hasn't moved to another club, and I think he has mistakes in him. So any sort of sustained pressure, particularly with... I saw what Lukaku did against Leverkusen, and that potentially could be a big problem for Shakhtar.
All right. Well, semi-finals coming up on Monday, so we've got ample time between now and then to formulate more thoughts about that game. Sasha, though, while we have you on, last few days have seen a rash of other very interesting stories from the East, so perhaps we could get you to run us through those in Sasha's Russian Corner. Nice to hear those notes again. Hey, Sasha, let's start with serial winner Dejan Lovren, who's at Zenit St. Petersburg, you know, and he's already won his first trophy there, hasn't he?
Yeah, one game, one cup. And he, the Super Cup was his first match. And I think what we've seen Lovren really stand out with is he's aggressive. He's positive coming out of defence. He's actually faster than most of the defenders as well. He really stands out in the Russian league. And he doesn't really have to have Van Dijk next to him holding his hand. He has Yaroslav Rakitsky, who is a Ukrainian centre-back, next to him. But so far, they both looked pretty imperious. Having said that, in the Super Cup, he did let one of the Lokomotiv players go in behind him for the Lokomotiv goal. So, you know, it's not all plain sailing, but he has definitely stood out. Today, they kept a clean sheet in Volgograd. Okay, team has got promoted. But so far, he's looking relatively comfortable.
Did they drop the Super Cup, Sasha?
No, they didn't. They managed to hold this one together.
So previously, Ivanovic, who Lovren's replacing, was lofting the Russian Cup, which is made of exquisite crystal, and dropped it. What happened to it? Did it smash?
So the lid smashed. The lid at the very, very top. And there is actually a video where you can actually hear it breaking, which is obviously was quite a sound. From what I understand, I mean, I think obviously they'll be repairing it. Why is it made of crystal? The old Soviet Cup was made of crystal back in the 30s. So I think this, okay, it's a different design, but I think this sort of went with a similar thing when they designed the Russian Cup about 30 years ago.
Nice. Okay, tell us about the penalty that was awarded in the game between Spartak and Sochi at the weekend. Just to give a little bit of background here, listener, Spartak had gone 2-0 up in this one. The second goal from Jordan Larsson, son of the former Celtic and Barcelona star Henrik. Sochi, though, start to claw their way back for a penalty in the first half, and then in the 90th minute they get another penalty. Very controversially. Here's a little bit of reaction to that.
Oh my good. Oh my God. And another penalty. Come on. Okay. Another penalty for Sochi. Oh my goodness.
Now, both penalties against Spartak were awarded with the referee consulting the VAR. Spartak's reaction to seeing 2 points dropped at the last minute, Sasha, was pretty extreme.
It was. It was absolute outrage, given that the penalty was very iffy and everyone was amazed that it wasn't overturned by VAR. But what was truly extraordinary, actually, was what happened the day after, because Match TV got the referee, Vasily Kazartsev, and the VAR, Alexey Yeshkov, on to explain what they were doing. And with that as well, you have a passage of about, I think, a minute and 13 seconds of the discussion between the referee, VAR, and the thinking process. And the amazing thing is, I mean, you could hear the confusion, and, you know, the referee tells, you know, player to step back, and at some point the linesman chimes in. It was about, you know, I think he's asking about how much time will be added on. But fundamentally, the VAR, he sees the first cut of what happens, and he utters, "Oh, I can't not disallow this." And I think then he sees a few other angles and goes, "Oh, maybe there is a bit of doubt there." So then he, you know, he's kind of talking through this process, talking with his operator, and in the end, he tells the referee that the goal stands. And then he goes on Match TV to explain what's going on. He isn't very eloquent, but from what I understood, like what he meant is that it wasn't clear cut.
Okay.
So therefore, we're going with the on-pitch decision.
Right. Which is all kind of so far so within the realms of football and controversy. But Spartak's owner then takes it a step further by announcing that he is withdrawing Spartak Moscow from the Russian league.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's reaction straight away was, oh yeah, sort of feet of pique, and, you know, it's empty words. And of course, he went back on them the following day, you know, allowed himself to be persuaded to stay in the league. But again, it's not a good look. You know, it's just, again, people talking without thinking, which I think is Leonid Fedun, the Spartak owner. That's been his problem, I think, for quite a number of years. And I think that sort of adds to the general impression of him not perhaps being in control of the situation. Although, you know, in this situation, you can see why he would be upset. I mean, Spartak have had a series of calls go against them towards the back end of last season as well. But the general reaction now, I think it's kind of building up. There was another incident tonight. I mean, we're talking on Tuesday. Rubin Kazan, Leonid Slutsky's Rubin Kazan, played at home against Lokomotiv. They were 1-0 down. Their striker goes through on goal and gets cleaned out by Guilherme. It's an absolutely obvious, like, yeah, to me, it's pretty obvious penalty. Lokomotiv go down the other end and score. Slutsky absolutely loses it, gets sent off at halftime. And after the game, he gives this really sort of kind of emotional interview, and the way he sums it up is he says about the referees, they think we're idiots. They don't explain the rules. They behave as they please. Because he says that, you know, the workings of the VAR were never explained to them before the start of the season. So right. Everyone was massively confused and everybody hates the referees.
Sasha, all the world's a village, as the Italians say. It's a small world. This is the same stuff that's happening everywhere. I think, yeah, what I was curious about was the fact that Spartak's owner was saying, yeah, we're not going to play in the Russian league anymore. I'm not sure. Was there somewhere else he was going to go and play?
Well,
and is it also true that the two match officials involved were then given polygraph tests?
Yeah, maybe by then that's sort of beginning to lose interest. But so it's a whole lot of confusion with VAR, and
right.
Everyone's up in arms, and it's more about VAR rather than any football.
Well, after all of that, the Champions League, it sounds pretty mundane. But you know what? It is getting underway Wednesday evening, the quarterfinals, and they kick off with an outstanding matchup, Atalanta-PSG. Jules and James are standing by to break that one down for us after we hear from Lee Price of Paddy Power.
Thanks, Jimbo. Hello again, listeners. This should be a juicy night, shouldn't it? PSG are third favourites to win the Champions League, with a seemingly clear route to the final, with just a team who have never been in the tournament before ahead of them. What could possibly go wrong for the Parisians? Yeah, exactly. And we make the match quite tight pricing. PSG are favourites, but they're not odds on, interesting. They're 11-10 to win this game. Atalanta are priced at 11-5. The draw is 11-4. We smell goals. Both teams' score is priced at 4-9, and there's odds on there's at least 3 goals in this match. It's also just 5-4. There's 4 more goals inside the 90 minutes. Atalanta like a goal or two, and that could spell trouble for PSG. They're currently priced, the French champions, at 5-1 to win this tournament. Atalanta at 12-1. Could they be dark horses? Could PSG do what PSG usually do? Let's see.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply, and when the fun stops. Atalanta, Paris Saint-Germain. It's a sort of colossal mismatch the great sport is made of. PSG, the sovereign wealth fund, who dropped just 2 points in the group stage of the Champions League, who beat Dortmund in the last 16, and who have conceded just 4 goals in 8 Champions League matches. Atalanta, who lost all their first 3 in the group stage, who've conceded 16 goals, but who've scored against every single keeper they faced in this competition, with the exception of Kyle Walker. Atalanta PSG is a match of contrast. On the one hand, rinascerai. And on the other, but which team is better? Let's put them head to head with Jules et Jim. All right then, guys. Atalanta and PSG. Let's start with history. Who's got better history? When was Atalanta founded, James?
1907, James. It's 63 years older than Paris Saint-Germain. A lot of history.
Yeah. La Dea, founded by a Greek professor and named after the Atalanta, the goddess of hunting. All right. Paris Saint-Germain, who are they named after, Jules?
After the best city in the world, I guess. Cities at least that merged 50 years ago. So, yeah, we're only 50 years old. But there was history before that as well, a bit.
Okay, population. Which one wins out here? Paris, what have you got, Jules?
12 million if you count the banlieue and the suburbs.
Right. And what about all the players around the world? That would bring in another million, no?
Yes, you're right. All the Paris born and bred, you mean. I mean, every club, pretty much all the top clubs have one in their squad.
Okay. I think Paris might shade this one, James. What's Bergamo's population?
It's 120,000, James. That's all.
Right. Plucky underdogs. Okay, then. Budget, and there's a similar mismatch there, isn't there, James?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Atalanta's wage bill, it's, 36 million euro after tax, which is pretty phenomenal because they've kind of almost... Well, they did make that back just through the group stages alone and getting through it. So, yeah, for Atalanta to be there and to get back to be in this competition next year as well, it's like that scene in DuckTales at the intro where, yeah, you just got the duck diving into the sea of money. There you go.
Right, Paparoni. 36 million, that's what PSG spent on croissant.
And pan de chocolat as well, you know.
The pan of chocolate is very expensive.
It is.
That's true.
It's what Neymar earned pretty much in a year. He's on 32 million net a year. So the Atalanta wage bill, the whole team's wages are equivalent to what Neymar on his own makes in 1 year in Paris, whose budget is over 500 million euros a year. But what's interesting in Paris is since the Qatari took over in 2011, the growth in terms of revenues, I mean, some are a bit dodgy, I know, because they come from the same ownership. But overall, what they've done in terms of marketing to the club and, you know, shirt sales and other sponsors with companies that are not linked to Qatar or the Qatari royal family, it's still very impressive how they've run the club in that way.
All right then, Jules. What about record signing? Who's PSG's record signing? And how much?
Neymar, yeah, 222 million euros, which was his release clause. I think they were happy to pay it, but this is not a price that, you know, you can tell me some clubs and PSG included sometimes pay over the odds. That was a release clause. They had to pay if they wanted him, so they did. But yeah, it's a lot.
Okay. What's Atalanta's record signing, James?
Well, before PSG were even born, they did have a player, Giuseppe Savoldi, who, of course, was subject to a world record transfer from Bologna to Napoli back in the day, Mr. Due Miliardi, as he was called. But their record signing, James, is a recent one. It's Duvan Zapata, who they paid 26 million euro for. If you want to go prior to Gasperini coming in and basically getting them into Europe, so we're talking the last 4 years, their biggest sign was 10.5 million euros. Luca Cigarini, the kind of, you know, one of those many poor man's Pirlo kind of players.
Nice. Which club has the best celebrity fans?
Well, it's got to be Atalanta because it's Messi.
Messi's an Atlanta fan.
It's that. No, I haven't. It's Luca Messi, who's a boxer from Bergamo. So that's it. That's it. The guy who writes their anthems, Facchinetti, he plays in a band called Pooh, as in Pooh Bear, not as in Fecal Matter. But that band is actually from Bologna. But is it Facchinetti? He's written all their kind of anthems. So I suppose he is, but they write
okay.
Some quite
this Jules, give him some proper celebrity fans.
God, come on! I mean, I don't know where to start, really. Vienna is a proper PSG fan.
Seen her at Juventus games.
Because it's Paris, and I think, again, the Qatari recognised that there was, you know, a lot of glamour to bring as well and trying to get that sort of image. So we've had over the years many top celebrities. I mean, Michael Jordan, of course. You know,
Jules, no. Like, a proper PSG
Michael
fan.
Michael Jordan comes to the Parc des Princes, follows the club's results. And I can give you plenty more, you know.
Because he's got a business
me
interest.
Me and my dad included.
All right, there you go. All right, what about biggest scandal? Biggest scandal in club's history, James?
Well, you've got Cristiano Doni, the captain of Atalanta, the hero, who was practically given the keys to Bergamo and yet was involved in a match-fixing scandal. I think we all
arrested by the Carabinieri on Christmas morning, hiding behind his car in his garage.
Exactly, and now he just lives in a bar by Mallorca. That's where you can find him. Cristiano feels like he was sold out, that he was made the scapegoat of a bigger scandal.
He took the fall for the club that he loves. Jules, what PSG got in terms of scandals? There was that time that Ibrahimovic parked his car in front of the club car parking because they'd fired his chef and it was a protest and no one could get their cars out. That's pretty much it, isn't it?
No, that's not the story. He got the chef sacked at the training ground because the food was not to his liking.
But he also parked his...
Yeah, he also blocked because someone had parked on his space and he said, if someone parks on my space, no one leaves the car park. So he blocked the gates.
No, okay. Well, let's move on to Wednesday night's game then. Which team has better motivation?
It's got to be Atalanta, no? Because they've got a city behind them, and they haven't just got a city behind them. Well, Jules, I mean, Bergamo is one of the worst affected areas, not only in Italy, but in Europe and the world from COVID-19. They estimate that around, not just in the city, but around the area, 6,000 people died. And that's why when you heard that song earlier, Rinascerò, you know, sort of, we will rise again, we will be reborn. I think... there is an extra kind of spinta in più, as they would say, sort of thing just pushing them on. And also, a country is behind them. They are the last Italian side in the competition. And as Gasparini said today, tutta l'Italia tifa per noi. Siamo come una nazionale. We are like the national team. And I think that's true. They cannot lose.
Do you think they've already won? Do you think they've already won?
I think so.
What's driving PSG?
The end of the curse, James. There's been a curse. When Champions League big games come our way, either you've got big players injured or suspended. You've got the remontadas where the team seems to be choking and very fragile psychologically, I think, as we remember against United and Barcelona. So there's a real feeling that, you know, they just never turn up, or just things go against PSG when those big games come. And even at the beginning of the week, or at the end of last week, sorry, Thomas Tuchel said, I don't know why, but it's always negative when those big Champions League games come. So, yeah, I think I think going through, even if it's just Atalanta, they're a very good team, but it's not the pedigree of all the top clubs in Europe. But just going through mentally, psychologically, to a semi-final again for the first time in 25 years, I think... will be huge for the club.
Okay. Biggest threat and biggest weakness of these two teams? Jules, first of all, Paris Saint-Germain?
Neymar, of course, especially with Mbappe being on the bench at the start, unless there's a big surprise and he starts tomorrow, but I think it's unlikely. So Neymar, which, again, he came to the club, he wanted that kind of pressure, he wanted to be the big star and to deliver, and, you know, big games belong to big players and all that BS, so... We will see if he does deliver tomorrow. And the biggest weakness, I guess, is in midfield in the sense of, I don't know how they can cope with the high press and how they can cope with getting the ball back once they lose it. And I think that's where the game is going to be won and lost anyway. If Tuchel finds the right formula and they're right up there in midfield and can counter De Bruyne and Schreuder and whoever plays in midfield for Atalanta, then I think they'll have a big chance.
I think biggest strength, it's like the final scene of The Sopranos where Tony knows it's coming, but he doesn't know when it's coming. It's going to come. And you don't know who it is. You don't know whether it's Papu. You don't know whether it's Duvan Zapata. You don't know whether it's Robin Gosens. They'll score on you. And that's Atalanta's big strength. And then as to the weakness, I suppose it's they don't have any other way of playing. You know, when it comes to managing games, yeah, this team just keeps going, keeps going, keeps going. You know, its biggest strength is its weakness in some respects, in that, you know, we all look at whether Atalanta, the quote-unquote best team in Italy this season, why haven't they maybe made a better fist of challenging events for the title? It's because they've leaked too many goals. And I think that's one of the reasons why this quarterfinal is so exciting, because you've got, you know, the possibility of Neymar, Icardi, you know, Mbappe's in the squad, but I doubt he'll play, against, yeah, the, you know, a team that doesn't have the names that PSG, but kind of makes you smile and makes you look forward to watching them in the same way you should do when you watch PSG. And that's what Atalanta are all about.
All right, they're the fun that maybe got lost along the way for their, you know, rivals from the metropolis. Hey, Jules, just on a general note, the way that Atalanta play, the only way they play, do PSG ever face anybody like that in Liga? Is that going to be a bit of a shock to them?
No, I think they've prepared themselves. They know, I mean, everybody knows how Atalanta play anyway. There's no secret there. And I don't think Gasperini will change anything. But what was interesting...
But the level of aggression that they have with and without the ball... Atalanta, that's not something that PSG come up against often.
No, but what I was going to say is what was interesting is in the two cup finals they played in the last 2 weeks, PSG struggled really to beat that press. And if you can't beat Saint-Étienne's press, you're never going to beat Atalanta's press, because they are the best. With Liverpool, they're the best pressing team in Europe right now. So it's not that they run more than you, it's they run better than you. And I think if you're not able to play from the back at PSG, you always do, and beat their press, then I think you'll be in big trouble. So I wouldn't be surprised if tomorrow there's a goal scored by Zapata or Malinovsky or Papu Gomez from a ball that they get back in PSG's box or 30, 20 yards, 25 yards or something like that, because I think PSG will struggle a bit with the press. However, if they do beat the press, even just once, there's a big chance as well that they will create something out of it. So it would just be a case of who pressed the best, who beats the press the best, and I think that's quite exciting.
Also, James, on a point of European heritage, given that we were talking about that with Sevilla, Manchester United earlier, Atalanta reached a European semi-final before Paris Saint-Germain did. In terms of their history, which was of course, in 1987, 1988, when they got to the semi-finals of the Cup Winners' Cup, whilst being in the second division. If they can do that whilst they're in the second division, I mean, as a top flight side that's finished third in Serie A, I mean, there's clearly no stopping them.
Wow. Well, we'll see. It's coming up 8 o'clock UK time.
James, like, as an all-time PSG front line against an all-time Atalanta front line, who would you take? Okay, would you take Zlatan, Neymar, and Mbappe, or would you take Super Pippo Inzaghi, Bobo Vieri, and one of Claudio Canicio or Gigi Lentini?
Okay, but Pippo Inzaghi, who is not at his best. Bobo Vieri, who is not at his best.
Pippo Inzaghi, right? 24 goals that season.
Vincenzo
Montella. No, top flight.
Well, listener, okay. They could be here doing this for some time yet.
Anyway,
but let's you and I leave them to it. We'll wrap up this Totally Football Show Summer Special there. But if you do want to hear more of James and Jules discussing Atalanta PSG and so much more, make sure you tune in at 11 o'clock. Or anytime you like on YouTube to BT Sports Club 2020 Daily, because they're both joining me on that show on Wednesday morning. Woof. All right, then. Many thanks, boys, for being with us today. Many thanks as well to Sasha Gurionov for that extraordinary roundup. And you, listener, and also producer Ben, who's back today. Hurrah. We'll be back same time Thursday morning. With all our reaction to Wednesday night's events, do make sure you join us then. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on The Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Muddy Knees Media.